An Irish Independent digital subscription doesn't just get you the news. It gets you the best of Ireland's stories all in one place. Whether it's the best of politics, business, sport, entertainment or lifestyle. Get it all for just €4 a month for 12 months when you first subscribe. Visit independent.ie/subscribe today. Irish Independent. Terms and conditions apply. Cancel anytime.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by cardiologist Dr. Paddy Barrett, chatting all things cardiovascular disease.
The way I look at this is that the two statistics that everyone should really be aware of is cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death globally and in most developed nations, but it's also the most preventable. 90% of it can be prevented at an early stage if you just follow the right steps and formula. So I look at it as a scary opportunity.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
Hello and welcome to the throw-in independent.ie's GAA podcast in association with Allianz. I'm Will Slattery, and unfortunately we do not have Michael Verney in studio this week. As always, he has been laid low with some car trouble, allegedly, or at least that's his excuse this Monday morning. But I'm delighted to be joined by Donica Boyle of the Irish Independent and Dublin legend Kieran Whelan as well. And Donica, we'll go through a very interesting weekend in Allianz Football League action. But before we get into maybe a specific game, I guess referees have really been under the microscope for timekeeping issues and an incident in the Kerry Tyrone game, which maybe where we'll start, because I know Eamon Sweeney is a big piece on it in today's Irish Independent, where David Clifford received a second yellow card after a tussle with Tyrone cornerback Ben McDonald. It was a classic one where the referee dished out two yellow cards for just a general melee, although it looked like Clifford was just pinned to the ground and didn't really do much, and it kind of put that sort of incident really, you know, a big talking point now.
Yeah, it was one of those sort of classic GAA solutions to a classic GAA problem. You know, you see two fellas tussling, you just assume both people are equally guilty and dish out two yellows. I suppose at club level you kind of expect to see that sort of stuff, and it's, you know, it's probably accepted really at that level, but you do expect the county game for everyone involved, referees, umpires, linesmen, to be more sophisticated, to have seen all these sort of tricks before and to call it for what it was. Any of the footage I saw just showed that, you know, essentially Clifford was wrestled to the ground. He did it very, very little. And, you know, people will say the referee should have done better, but I would look at his umpires and his linesmen there, because he was taking care of business, dishing out black cards maybe 20 metres away at the time. And he turns around and he gets, obviously this is reported to him, and I suppose he gets no help from the people he's brought with him. So, you know, they put him in a difficult spot.
Yeah, Kieran, I guess a big talking point over the last number of years has been maybe umpires and their role, and whether we should have, you know, proper referees in those positions, because oftentimes the referee, you know, has family members or, you know, guys who mightn't be, you know, as experienced as the referee himself in dealing with these matters. Because certainly yesterday, and I saw you discussing it, the right outcome was not reached.
No, absolutely. And let's hope yesterday is a bit of a watershed moment. You know, this has been kind of something that's creeped into the game over the last few years, where particularly big players are targeted on opposition teams. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. A lot of it comes from managers on the sideline, you know, no matter what level you're playing at, whether it's club level, you know, junior level, inter-county level, managers will try and kind of, wind up the key players and drag them into something to try and get them on the yellow or get them sent off. It's been part and parcel of the game. We can't kid ourselves in that regard, but it's crept in at inter-county level, and, you know, you'd like to just see a lot more common sense approach that, you know, yes, they really, the referee, they should look at these incidents and say, well, who was the instigator? Who actually caused this incident or started this incident? Because it was quite obvious a substitute had just came on, and maybe, you know, Fergal Kelly should have engaged with the umpire and said, well, you know, what did Clifford start this? Because it was quite clear Clifford was lying on the ground with his hands out. You know, sometimes key players actually get involved and they get embroiled and they might retaliate, but Clifford certainly didn't do that yesterday. And it was a terrible, terrible decision. No support from the umpires, and you're right, they have to be more accountable for key actions in a game that can result in a player getting sent off. So I'd like to think that, you know, the referees will get together this week and they'll discuss this and look at it going forward and say, guys, in situations like that, you know, let's look at the context of the incident and see, you know, is it, would it be the defender that's instigating this? And if it is the defender, you know, let's start punishing the defender. And instead of the cop out of just saying it's handy here to give two yellow cards, you know, that kind of has to stop. And the only way you'll stop it is by referees engaging properly and saying the instigator is the one that has to be punished. Because, you know, we had it, I remember going back 10 years ago, where there was, you know, rules put out, the third man in was always going to be the one that was, you know, I remember referees coming into our dressing rooms 10, 15 years ago and saying, you know, we're clamping down on the third man in. If two lads are tangling together, the third man in is the one that's going to be punished. So they just have to change their approach, little common sense, and start focusing on who's instigating these incidents and try and stamp it out again.
Like a lot of these teams that referees have, they've come up with them in a lot of ways. Like, they bring their umpires with them, and when they start out in the careers and they come up through the grades, they're with them a lot of the time all the way up. So as I said earlier, like, they have surely seen this sort of thing before, if you get to the level of a game where you're given an inter-county match. So, you know, it's disappointing to see one of the, I won't call it the oldest trick in the book, but it's certainly in that chapter, and it wasn't called for what it was.
And do you think, to Kieran's point, do you think it could be a watershed moment, or do you think there could be, hopefully, could instigate that change that we want?
I think the fact that it's, and the reason we're talking about it so much is because it's David Clifford.
Yeah.
And everything he does, obviously, there's a light shone upon it. And I think, yeah, this will absolutely focus minds now that, you know, I think if something happens in 2 weeks' time when the Football League comes back, I think referees will be much more cognizant. If the referees meet between now and then, I'm sure it'll be a topic of conversation.
Yeah, Kieran, I guess the other big issue in terms of officiating was the timekeeping element of it. Obviously, you had Dublin Monaghan, you know, on Saturday night and the previous game, Dublin Kerry at the start of the league, where a lot more injury time was played. And fair enough, if 5 minutes is called and there's a lot of stoppages or substitutions, there is maybe a need to add on more minutes. But then you have the case that Andy McEntee was referring to yesterday in the defeat to Meath, or to Mayo rather, where the referee maybe didn't add on any extra time. And he was pointing out, you know, is there one rule for certain teams when there's a big TV match, and there's another rule when a game is played, you know, away from, you know, the cameras?
Yeah, I don't think that's kind of a fair comment. I can understand his frustration yesterday. I was down in Navan, and obviously, you know, Meath looked like they're going to steal the game, and Kevin McLaughlin got the goal, and Meath were kind of on top in the ascendancy going into injury time. They'd got it back to 1 point, and, you know, they were looking, there was an injury in injury time, and, you know, they were looking to get something out of the game. You know, it's a third defeat in a row, and I can fully understand his frustration. But I think it really comes back to consistency. I certainly would be all for referees adding the extra time when there is injuries, or if there is cynical play in the injury time period. You know, we had the same with Cara Finn and Kilcoo, and I think it was warranted. You know, Cara Finn were very cynical in that period, and Kilcoo got the extra opportunity. We had the same a few weeks ago, where Dublin were very cynical against Kerry in the last couple of minutes, and Kerry got that opportunity. So I would prefer to see teams get the opportunity rather than when there is cynicism involved, or where there is people trying to slow down the clock. So I think Saturday was probably warranted. I don't think there's a different approach to different counties and stuff like that. But, you know, I could understand Danny McEntee's frustration. And again, like, that comes back to consistency. We've seen over the last couple of years there's definitely much more injury time being played in games. You know, there's 5-6 minutes in most games now, and the referees are actually adding on for everything in normal time. So that's why you're going to get an extension of that into injury time if there is delays. So again, it comes back to consistency, and you know, managers now expect, you know, that if there is an injury time in the last 4 or 5 minutes, that it's going to be added on. But, like, we've also, you know, got to look closely at it and say, you know, we're putting huge onus of responsibility on referees. Yeah. So much going on, particularly in the last few minutes when fellas are pulling and dragging out of everybody and trying to slow the whole thing down, and it results in additional cards and all that sort of stuff. We're seeing it. It's becoming more common, where we're seeing a lot of yellow and black cards in that, what you call the red zone, if you want to call it that. So, you know, maybe, you know, it works in other sports. It's worked in ladies football. You know, maybe the time factor, we could take it out of control of the referee, because there's enough to be done at the moment.
The best sanction that the referee has available to him in that, because players will do almost anything to, you know, get over the line in those final few minutes. And the best sanction the referee has is adding time on and basically punishing them for their cynical play by keeping the game alive. I just, I, I, I was saying to you before we started,
You had the stopwatch out.
Well, I came home from. I was a bit surprised by Andy's comments. You know, I thought there was more time. I definitely thought there was more time, but maybe it was just pure frustration on his behalf. So I went home, and the TG Cahir player, you could call it up immediately by the time I got back, and I looked at it. The Mayo player that he was referring to, Brian Walsh, he got turned over, got done for overcarrying on 71 minutes and 10 seconds, the whistle blew on. By the time the ball was back in play, it was 71-55. Now, small caveat to that, so that's 45 seconds, small caveat to that, Brian Walsh got up on 71 minutes and 40 seconds. So there was about a 10-second delay of James McEntee taking the free himself. That was his own delay. So there was another 30 seconds. But as I think Kieran hit the nail on the head there, you know, the referees have so much going on between advanced marks, black cards, yellow cards, the directive on head high tackles. Like, you could go on, and to expect them to get everything absolutely spot on all the time is probably unrealistic. And I think we need to be helping them here with the regulations and the rules rather than maybe going after them for it.
Yeah, possibly another watershed moment, as Kieran referred to earlier. And maybe just to get into the action, Kieran, as well. Obviously, the Dublin-Monaghan game was a very intriguing contest on Saturday night. I think that was Dublin's largest halftime deficit since the league semi-final against Cork in 2014. I think they were 9 or 10 points down against Monaghan. And then even with 10 minutes to go, they were 9 points down and yet still salvaged a draw. So while Desi Farrell will be delighted, I'm sure, with that battling spirit still very much evident, it was a fairly abject performance for large spells.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, firstly, I have to give Monaghan, I suppose, a lot of credit. You know, they came up very well prepared with a good game plan and, you know, targeted a couple of key Dublin players, I suppose, to nullify their influence. And they were very, very good on the counter-attack. You know, Rory Beggan's long kickouts were excellent. It was kind of going back to those days of Donegal where he was hitting it over the press and Monaghan hurt Dublin at times. So they deserve a lot of credit. But for 60 minutes, they should have won the game. They should have closed it out. It probably felt like a loss to them going up the road because they were still 6 points up after 65 minutes. But Desi will be, I suppose, he will be very disappointed, I think, with the first half. Dublin were lethargic. They looked heavy-legged. They stood off Monaghan. There was no intensity there. They struggled on a few of their own kickouts. Their forward play wasn't very direct. They were slow in their build-up play. They let Monaghan regroup. You know, they never looked like they were going to, you know, use the mark to any beneficial or go direct into that D area. So there was a lot of aspects of that game that just looked a little bit stale for that first 65 minutes, really. And they probably look back and say, well, they got out of jail. They got momentum. They put a bit of doubt in Monaghan's mind coming into that, you know. And Kevin McMenamin's goal was opportunistic, like a high ball in, and he follows it in. And it gave Dublin momentum coming into the injury time. And Monaghan probably got a little bit nervous, but probably didn't deserve to get out now of the game, if you'd be honest. And, you know, it will be something Desi will look at. Listen, maybe they had a very hard week's training under their belt. And, you know, I think one of the things about this Dublin team is that they've been very, very focused on certain games in the league over the last few years. And certain teams like Kerry or Mayo, where there's a huge psychological edge to the games, they've been maybe a little bit more focused. And that focus wasn't there the other night, and Monaghan took advantage of it.
Yeah, Donegal, from a Monaghan perspective, they'll be devastated. Like, to have that buffer going in with 10 minutes to go, even entering injury time, I think they were 6 or 7 points clear.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of opportunities as well to kill the game, hit a couple of wides. Like, Rory Beggan, I know, who was really good, maybe put a free or two wide, and a few other opportunities went astray. Is it a damaging defeat for them when you get that close to taking such a big scalp?
I think it is to an extent, but maybe tempered by the fact that Monaghan have beaten Dublin in the league before, so they know that it's not, you know, it's not necessary, wouldn't be a landmark for them in the way that it might be for other teams. But yeah, look, they should have seen it out. There's no doubt about that. And that will sting, the fact that I think you saw the reaction of the players after the game. Like, I think Darren Hughes was up talking to the referee, I presume, about timekeeping again. I didn't get the chance to get the stopwatch out this morning for that one. But I have to say, at the time, it felt like there was a lot of delays and, you know, I suppose trying to kill the clock going on. So if the referee uses extra time beyond the allotted injury time, extra minutes to combat that sort of play, I think that's a good thing. But look, Monaghan have had a strange sort of ability to certainly in the league anyway, to live with Dublin, which is it's not really clear how or why that they've been able to do it, but they have been able to do it
because
every time.
Because in the Championship they've been, you know, comprehensively beaten in the 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's why I think that result yesterday, the Dublin performance, you know, you can take it with a large pinch of salt. You know, you still have Conn to come back, Jack McCaffrey, Cluxton, you know, brilliant players. So I think while Desi, there will be some concern. I think maybe a couple of fellas might have played themselves out of the thing for the time being, at least, rather than there being any major flaw with the Dubs at the moment.
Yeah, Kieran, because I guess, you know, we know so much about this Dublin team. They've been around for so long, but one aspect of it is maybe the new faces that Desi played the other night, you know, Darren Mullen, Dan O'Brien, Liam Flatman. I know Sean Bugler was involved in the Super 8s against Tyrone last year and got man of the match, but he didn't feature in any of the key games, and he's someone who maybe looks like he could play a big part in 2020. Like, what about the other guys that Desi introduced? Like, how would you rate or assess their chances of maybe playing a bigger role going forward?
Yeah, well, I suppose, listen, it's early days yet, and I suppose what was significant, you know, after Paddy Andrews got injured, but the next three players that Desi took off were kind of the three newer lads, and then took Aaron Byrne off as well, who we brought on. So, you know, making, I suppose, your debut or your first big game in Croke Park for the likes of Darren Mullen or Liam Flatman is very intimidating experience, and it can be very nerve-wracking. So I suppose you have to be a little bit patient. Desi's obviously seen something in them, probably too early to judge them, you know, based on Saturday night's performance. I thought Dan O'Brien done reasonably well. You know, he certainly got on a lot of ball in the first half. He kicked a point. He had that bit of appetite. He looked a little bit more comfortable. And he would have been very happy with the likes of Sean Bugler probably coming off the bench, and he ended up in the right place a good few times, and particularly kicked a very good score turning off his left foot. And I know Sean well from going back to the development squad years, and very, very talented player. I always kind of compared him in some ways to Dermot Connolly, that he was so comfortable off both sides, and a very, very good footballer. So that's a huge boost from his perspective. But I think overall, I think when you look at, you know, Monaghan, the difference probably with Monaghan is that Monaghan would have really focused on Dublin as a big game in terms of measuring where they're at, and came up with to get key matchups right, and focused in on Dublin's strengths, where Dublin may have taken the pitch, you know, with an attitude of let's see how we go here and experiment, and maybe weren't focused in on some of Monaghan's strengths. And I think that can happen sometimes at this stage of the league. So, as I said, they do deserve great credit. Banty has really energised them, and a lot of people probably thought that Monaghan might be a team that might have to go through a bit of transition, but that doesn't look the case at the moment. They look like a team that has a little bit of extra work done and is going to push towards right to the end of the league.
Yeah, Dunnock, it's so tight in Division 1. Only 1 point separates first place from seventh place. And even in the results across the weekend, you had Dublin Monaghan drawing on 1 point between Kerry and Tyrone, between Donegal and Galway, and between Meath and Mayo. And we might go to that game in Eden Dork. It was moved from Healy Park and atrocious conditions. So it did kind of temper maybe how much you can take from the game. But, you know, Kerry were 4 points up at half time. I know the Clifford sending off had a huge bearing on maybe them not snatching a late draw. But it was an important win for Mickey Hart, because he does have a week in hand in this league. And obviously, Colin McShane's now back in the fall, but it's still maybe a bit of a transitional league for Tyrone.
Yeah, and I was in Castleblaney the week before when Monaghan beat them, and I'd say Monaghan, I think, was a 4 points in it at the end, and it was a 4 point hammer. And to be honest, like, Tyrone were all over the place, really, in a lot of respects. Like, the kind of things you take for granted from Tyrone that day, like tracking runs, you know, being solid defensively, being, you know, difficult to beat and being physical and in your face, like, not much of it was there, really. And Monaghan really should have won by an awful lot more. Like, I think Tyrone kicked a few late points to put a bit of respectability in the scoreline. Mickey Hart said that as much himself. So yeah, it was an important win and a good week for them too, as you say, with Colin McShane back in. Like, I don't bringing the all-star footballer back, how much involvement he's had over the last while.
What have you made of that whole saga?
I suppose there's two ways. Like, just from a GA point of view, it's great to have the Championship's joint top scorer back in tow for another year. I'll be interested to see whether it means that, you know, AFL have changed tack a little bit and are now looking at, rather than emerging young players and gambling on their ability to make the transition, if they're looking at fellas who are a little bit older. McShane is 24, and to say, right, well, you know, these guys have the physical conditioning, they probably have the game intelligence because there's enough similarities between the two matches, and then they take a gamble, right, can we get one of these guys over and can we turn them into something? So I'm not sure if that will happen. I think they only did something on it last week. Was it Kieran Sheehan was 22 when he went over? So, you know, otherwise they tend to be 18, 19, that general age. So if it is a sea change of what Aussie Rules clubs are looking at, and it seems like Cahill turned the AFL down rather than the AFL deciding, listen, it's too late for them to make the transition. So if that becomes a thing, I think it'll be very interesting. But big, huge lift for Tyrone. Like, he's very important.
Yeah, it's a massive boost, Kieran, because obviously Mickey Hart was very vocal in the media about the whole situation, about, you know, AFL player or AFL clubs taking, you know, prominent GA players. And then even when it was announced that he was staying, there was a photo with Mickey Hart, Colin McShane, and his new employer, you know, somewhere up in that part of the world. But yeah, like, so what have you made of how it's developed?
Well, listen, it's quite obvious, you know, Mickey Hart looked like he was going to lose one of his key players, you know, an all-star forward. You can't ignore, you know, the player welfare and the player career development in the background as well. You know, guys that can play inter-county football that can be easily forgotten about when they finish and they have focused on their career and or even their financial capabilities. So that is important to players. And, you know, I think there was obviously some sort of role or job put in place that was appealing to McShane and Mickey Hart is a happy man. Everybody's happy, and he's staying at home because he ran the risk of losing him. So it's quite simple in my view. They just made sure that they'd done something for him to keep him at home. And listen, Tyrone will reap the rewards of that. He came on yesterday. He didn't have much of an impact, I don't think. I didn't see the game, but it's certainly a huge boost for Mickey Hart going forward.
Yeah, they made him an offer he couldn't refuse, as Marlon Brando once said. And Kieran, just in terms of Kerry and Tyrone and where they're at, you know, especially with Kerry, because a lot has been made of maybe the defensive side of it, especially after conceding the two goals to Galway last weekend. You know, obviously Clifford has, you know, lit up the league thus far. But at the other end, would you still have concerns there?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's no doubt about it that it's the one area that Kerry need to focus on. They didn't concede a goal yesterday, but they were still potentially opened up at times by all accounts. So, you know, there's no doubting it's the biggest concern among the Kerry supporters at the moment, that they're very, very vulnerable in the back. And, you know, Dublin opened them up and Galway have opened them up. And while they have electric forwards, you know, that can do damage, and they're certainly in a good space in that regard, there's concerns around their defence. And it's an area that, particularly down the middle, that Kerry are going to have to focus on over the next few weeks and get right. Last year in the league, you know, when Peter Keane took over, he took quite a defensive approach. He had, you know, the typical 12, 13 men dropping back into his half forwards, dropping back into space and stuff like that, and closing down oppositions. There was a defensive approach to them, but that's not there this year. They're trying to play more man-on-man football, but they're leaving themselves a little bit exposed.
And in terms of maybe a team at the opposite end, you know, you look at Galway and how they've opened up their attack this year with that 1-point win over Donegal yesterday with two more goals. They have 5 goals in 3 matches. They had 5 goals across the entire league last year, Kieran. Like, so even in a short space of time, Páraic Joyce really does seem to have given them a bit more license to attack, or certainly gotten the attack firing in a way that under Kevin Walsh they probably weren't.
Yeah, listen, Galway, the story of the league so far. Very unlucky not to get a victory in Kerry. A big win yesterday up in Letterkenny, even though Donegal have a poor record there. But definitely, you know, they've been, I suppose, released a small bit. They probably played in a very rigid system under Kevin Walsh, who took, I thought, a lot of over-the-top criticism in it. He felt at the time he was probably trying to set them up, make them difficult to beat, and he had talent at the other end of the field. But it didn't really work out for them. But the only caution is that it's very, very early in the year. It's still the middle of February. You know, you got to look at the teams that we're talking about that have the bounce at the moment, are the likes of Monaghan and Galway, that are under new management. And you always get a little bit of a bounce in the early stages, maybe, of a good manager coming in. So it comes with a little bit of health warning. Yes, Galway are in a good position, and people will be looking at them as being prominent contenders for the league. But, you know, it's a long way to July and August. So the ground hardens up. You know, it will be interesting to see where they're at.
Yeah, Duncan, because I guess if you can attack well,
they're in a good spot. But
these wintry conditions, ideally, you're thinking,
yeah, absolutely, you're in a good spot. But you know, you can't underestimate, you know, the other end of the pitch as well. Yeah. You have to have a solid defensive structure, and you have to have a plan B. And you know, depends on who you're playing, whether you're going out to outscore somebody. So it's very, very early in the year to judge. We've seen, you know, teams in this position before early in the year, and then it kind of comes a little bit unstuck as the year goes on. But definitely, listen, Galway, there's a huge positive, I suppose, atmosphere around the place. Joyce is releasing them. The players look to be enjoying it. And the Cara Finn lads probably to come back into the equation as well. And, you know, you feel that Galway have been a sleeping giant for the last couple of years. So, but the real test will come during the summer.
And Damien Comer's back. You know, effectively missed all of last year. You know, I think he played in the very last match.
Off the bench, yeah.
Yeah, came off the bench. But he effectively missed all of it. And, like, Shane Walsh is just the most fabulously gifted footballer around. Like, he's just so good to watch. He does all the sort of stuff that he nearly... It's like it just all comes so natural and it's so easy to him. But Comer is a brilliant complement to all those sort of talents he have, because he's a very good footballer, but his raw power is so hard to deal with. So when you have the two of them playing well and playing in tandem, like, you know, they're going to be a handful for any team. So yeah. They definitely have a bounce, but I think Kieran's right. Like, I think we just need to wait until the summer until we make a final judgment on them.
Yeah, Kieran, and one more question before we let you go. Obviously, the flip side in that game yesterday, Donegal, 2-5 to 4 points ahead, you know, in the second half. And they lose by a point, and then obviously in the first game
my accumulator went down on this.
I feel bad for you. And in the first game,
I was watching Nav, and I was there. 7 points up. Oh, jeez, that's grand. That's me bet up. So,
and then in the first week against Mayo, similarly, they were 3 points up. I hope you didn't have an accumulator riding that day, Dunica. And Mayo scored a late goal. So Declan Bonner, albeit like there's still a lot of positivity around the team with the strength and depth they've built. You know, two disappointing results where they could have had another win and possibly a draw yesterday as well.
Yeah, well, I think, listen, they look to take the positives. They look to see that they're putting themselves in the position to win games. And while they'd be disappointed that the game's got away from them, you know, Donegal, for me, lads, I think are a team. You know, I remember speaking to Stephen Rochford last year around All-Ireland final time, and hugely optimistic with the level of talent that he has to work with. And we saw them last year, you know, being so dominant in Ulster, you know, the quality of the forwards they have, the physicality that they have, and they're a young side coming through. Like, I wouldn't be too concerned for Donegal at this point. You know, they were kind of a team probably that flattened out a small bit when they got to the Super 8s last year. So, you know, yes, they'd be disappointed that they've let a couple of games slip, but for me, they're going to be one of the top four or five teams come the summer.
Yeah, Kieran, just one last question, I guess. You mentioned how they've kind of flattened out in the Super 8s. It was 2 years in a row where they won Ulster in style, and then when they got to the last game of the Super 8s with a semi-final place on the line, they ran aground both years. Like, what do you think is missing, or what do you think they do need to do to kick on that this time?
Well, I'd say, listen, it's very hard to put a finger on that. You know, maybe they were excellent in the Ulster Championship last year, and you would have really tipped them to be a semi-final team. So, you know, maybe Declan Bonner is, you know, they struggled possibly in previous leagues, and maybe he's just timing it a lot differently this year. He still has a few players to come back into the fold. So, like, they won't be able to rectify that until come the summer, until come the Ulster Championship. But as I said, for me, they're a team that has a lot of talent, and I expect they're going to be there come the summer.
Owen Bond Gallagher broke his ankle last year, I think after the Ulster final, and that was huge. I remember, was it Martin McHugh maybe saying at the time that he was as big a loss, while everyone, I suppose, talks about Ryan and Michael Murphy, and it's like he was a massive loss to them as well, you know, with his sort of his ability to get forward and break lines and stuff like that. So yeah, that probably is the next step for them now. If that was to happen again this year, you would ask the question. But just on yesterday, like, it's a quick look there, like Paddy McBrearty still to come back into it. Don't think we've seen much of Oisin Gallan. No, I don't see him there either. So, you know, there's two serious options.
Definitely a team to watch going forward. Kieran, thanks so much for joining us this week.
No problem. Thanks, Kieran.
Cheers, Kieran.
Cheers. Thanks, bye.
I'm actually worth noting that Paddy McBrearty obviously missed that first, you know, the year previous. He got that knee injury before the Super 8s, wasn't it? When they were eliminated that year by Tyrone. So,
that's right, yeah.
So, like, they had to go to battle without kind of key cogs both years.
At bad times as well.
Yeah, so that will be a really interesting one to watch. And just to finish up in Division 1, the game you were at, just to briefly touch a little bit more on it before we move on to some of the lower leagues. Kevin McLaughlin once again steps up for Mayo in a big spot in a league match. You know, they've had a lot of, you know, guys coming in and out of the team, obviously, at this time of year. But he has always seemed to be one guy who stood up in key moments and really delivered for them.
I sort of touched on that in my match report this morning. Like, he's
very good match report.
When we talk, oh, thanks very much, Will. That's what I came here for. That's the validation I need. We talk about Mayo, and rightly so, we talk about Lee Keegan and Aidan O'Shea, and we talk about, you know, maybe Keith Higgins, Colin Boyle, all these fellas, and maybe in all that, McLaughlin sometimes gets forgotten about. But like, he's an absolutely fabulous footballer.
And lucky never to have won an All-Star, actually.
Lucky never to have won an All-Star. And he's one of those fellas who's, if people do talk about him, they talk about how underrated he is. And I think anyone who's been paying attention really rates him. I asked James Horne about him yesterday after the game, and he was just like full of praise for him in terms of his ability to do what he did, particularly with his intelligence to play against the wind and when possession would be so vital and so important. And he got 1-2 off the bench yesterday. That was the entirety of Mayo's tally that they managed in the second half. They didn't score for 28 minutes, I think, and as McLaughlin got a left-footed free. He's just a brilliant footballer, and he caused the turnover as well that led to his goal. So
yeah, it's funny you mentioned that 28 minutes barren spell, because that's been like a real feature of Mayo, you know, in general over the last while, is they do go long periods. I know there was terrible conditions. The conditions were terrible, but it has been a feature in a lot of games.
I suppose yesterday it can be excused to some extent because Meade didn't score for 25 minutes when they were playing against the wind in the first half as well, and they have issues going forward and in terms of scoring enough. I suppose, you know, but there's a lot of Mayo are still waiting on a lot of fellas to come back. Looks like Colin Boyle's in bother.
That was going to be, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like he's in bother now. He was asked directly, was it a cruciate injury? And he sort of didn't confirm it, but didn't deny it. He said, hopefully we'll see him at the end of the year. But there was reports yesterday online.
Very tough for a player who I think is going to be 34 this year.
Yeah. And a fellow who, you know, has found some really good form towards the end of last year as well. And, you know, still very an important player for them. So, going back to the game itself, Meade looked at one stage like they could conceivably win the game by scoring four times. They were 2-2 to 7 points up, so they took a 1 point lead, and they got two second half goals, and until essentially just a Meade defender, Robin Clark, got isolated. McLaughlin sort of forced him into an error, coughed it up to Ryan O'Donoghue, who gave it back to McLaughlin. He stuck it in the net, and Meade got two more points in the injury time. And then we had the thing earlier we talked about, Andy McAtee saying there wasn't enough time allowed for a stoppage, but it was a real sickener for me. Like, I think this was the one, the first two rounds they were missing so many players that, you know, it was going to be a huge ask. It was going to be a huge ask anywhere, and they needed absolutely everyone. They got a few players back over the last couple of weeks, and it's no coincidence that they went closer yesterday than they did at any stage previous in the league to getting the win.
Yeah, something we talked about last week, and I think it's probably better to ask you, because obviously as a Meade man, you'll probably be more in tune with the, you know, what people are feeling down there. But, you know, we've seen over the course of the last couple of years teams get promoted to Division 1 after, you know, really wanting to get up there, and then have quite a chastising experience up there, and it can leave a hangover going into the Championship. And like this, for Meade in particular, they were fighting for 10 years to get back up here.
Yeah.
And if they were to go on and, say, lose six matches, how damaging do you think it could be?
I think you're touching it there. Because they were trying so hard and so long and were so desperate to get up, I think that in the medium and long term, at least, they'll be all the better for getting up and playing these seven matches. I think it's very hard for them to see a way out of it now. They've Kerry and Dublin away in the next two matches, so it's very hard to see a way out of them now. I thought they needed two at least, and probably 3 points from the first three matches to give themselves a chance going into the Galway and Monaghan matches. I think are the last two with a chance of getting out of it. I suppose only time will tell in that regard. They have, I suppose, reached a level of consistency, and they did last year anyway, in terms of, you know, their performances against teams, and they won enough matches against teams similarly ranked or just below them to suggest that they were in the next tranche of teams beyond the top few. But that leap from the next bit, I did a piece before the league started, it's huge. I think it's, you know, you see Roscommon and Cavan were everyone's nailed on favourites go straight back down last year, and they did. We did a league preview in last year's paper, and there was no uniformity of opinion on anything in terms of who'd get promoted, relegated, who'd be in the league finals. except for the fact that Roscommon and Cavan would go down. That was across nine people, I think, you know, and Dick Clerken and Peter Canavan and all the reporters. So that is the next step now for Meath. And for all those teams in that group, Cavan, Roscommon, all those teams, like that's the hill they're all dying on at the minute.
Yeah, and just a quick look at maybe some of the lower leagues, you know, and if we thought the Division 1 was interesting with the spread of teams on a similar end of points, just 2 points separates first from last in Division 2. Particularly crucial given that the teams that are relegated could be facing into a second tier championship. And interestingly, I guess, you know, you had Armagh Kildare on Saturday night, again, in terrible condition. So, you know, in terms of the football, you don't maybe read too much into it. But in terms of Kildare, who would have advised the promotion now, it's two defeats in a row under Jack O'Connor. All of a sudden, they might be looking at the other end and conceivably looking. Now, it's maybe unlikely, but it certainly has been a very disappointing start to their league campaign.
It has, and particularly because, as you said, it's such an important campaign. Like that's a mini championship in itself, because none of the teams in that group would consider themselves being in the B championship or whatever title we end up giving it. So Kildare are a funny one. You know, sometimes you look at them on paper, you're thinking, yeah, he's a good player. They're all good players, and you think that they should be a lot better than they are. But maybe be it the conditions, or maybe just Kildare underperforming, but. Armagh were full value for a win by all accounts. Yeah. So, you know, it's been a big win for Kieran McGeaney as well. So he's been working on that for a long time. I think if they can get out of Division 1, it'll be a lot of vindication for him.
Yeah,
into Division 1.
Into year six. And there has been a lot of buzz around Armagh the last while. Like they were narrowly beaten by Mayo in a very entertaining qualifier last year, having already taken a big scalp against Monaghan. Like, they seem to be a team that, you know, could benefit from a promotion to Division 1, and also, like, with an eye to 2020, or the summer, rather.
Yeah, well, like, one of the, and it's a very simplistic thing to say, but it affects so many counties. Armagh seem to have all of their best players available to them. Like, Jamie Clark was in and out for a long time. He's back now and has been back for a couple of years. There's the emergence of the O'Neills, who are two very good footballers, and there's been that continuity there with Kieran McGeaney as well. So they've a lot of the raw materials. You know, I think Pat Spillane was saying it last night. You know, they've good forwards, and that goes a long, long way towards making any sort of team. Mm-hmm. And you can't manufacture them. So I think they're in a good spot. But look, Division 2, everyone's going to take lumps out of each other. You saw Roscommon's first two games. Like,
well, and exactly, like Armagh, I think, was the final score 16-10 to Armagh?
Yeah.
They lost 16-10, I believe, to Laois the week previous, like, in a result no one expected. It just shows the flux. And even if you're looking at Westmeath with two victories on the board already, they probably would have been one of the favourites to go down. Now, they're in a decent position, especially if you're looking towards the two teams going down being potentially in a second-tier championship. Like, it's going to be a very, very interesting finish to this league.
I think we could have some sort of a Super Sunday at the end of that division too. I think you could have maybe six or seven. You could even
maybe
have
some
eight
transfers
teams
as well.
All within the chance of either going up or down, depending on. You'll definitely have a handful of teams in the shakeups at both ends. So that's going to be very interesting. And I think we knew that as well. Division 2 is always going to be a dogfight. You know, that's going to be priority for pretty much all those teams.
And then maybe a quick look at Division 3, Cork, with another fairly comprehensive win over Down and Porky Cave. I think there was only 1,500, you can see the photo there in the Irish Independent, you have it in front of you, only about 1,500 people. It felt like a very cavernous atmosphere. It looks like they're going to coast to probably, you know, 7 from 7.
Yeah, and I think that most people expected that at the start of the year. I think the Cork we saw at the start of last year that got relegated from Division 2 versus the Cork we saw in the Super 8s, I think that the team at the end of the year was a truer reflection of the team and their talents. And again, another team with good forwards, and makes a huge difference. And, you know, they've a lot of when you can rack up scores in even conditions, 16 points in those conditions is more than decent. So that'll carry them a long way.
And I guess, you know, we're talking about the people who might fall through the trapdoor in Division 2, you know, conversely, you know, the team who goes up with Cork, it will be huge. And you're just looking at, like, Longford start, for instance. They're unbeaten. You know, they've beaten Leitrim and Louth and Drogheda Offaly, you know, maybe to some of the weaker teams in the division, but they've given themselves a fighting chance if they pick up another result or two against the head of potentially getting promoted.
Yeah, and I suppose all of the at this stage of the league, everyone's still in the fight, more or less.
Yeah.
You're nothing's gone, maybe with the exception of Meath because of the fixtures they have coming. But if you look at the other, more or less every team in the other three divisions, they're all still in the fight. So Limerick carrying on, they're a very good start as well in Division 4, like, won the McGrath Cup and now they're 3 from 3. Sligo hadn't won, their game was off obviously, but they hadn't won in I did it before. I think the first round is more than 600 days, I think, since their last win in league or championship. And they've two from two. So there's a couple of little stories and plots emerging, and we'll just have to watch them to see how they get on.
Yeah, and an important win for Derry as well. Like, they had a slow start under Rory Gallagher, again, beating Tipperary as well. Like, they'd be a team who definitely would have eyes on getting promoted in Division 2. And if they hadn't picked up that victory over Tipperary, it was looking very precarious for them.
Yeah, and I suppose, and a big defeat for Tipperary as well, because, you know, if they had to win that, they would have been up on 5 points and they'd be in second. So, you know, but there's going to be loads of more twists and turns in that Division 3, because as much as Division 2 is a dogfight to make sure they all want to stay up in the top flight, the two Sam Maguire spots, if you want to call them that, in Division 3 are going to be, like, again, most of those teams would consider themselves, you know, they should be playing Sam Maguire football. I would certainly be aiming for it. I don't think anyone would be saying, do you know what, the B Championship will suit us here and I will give it a proper rattle, because I still think there's a suspicion around it in terms of how it'll be met by players.
Exactly, another thing to look forward to later in the year or to follow with interest, and another good weekend of a great, interesting weekend of Allianz League action. But in the meantime, Donegan, thanks so much for joining us. I'm filling the void Michael Verney left with his alleged car trouble.
Yeah, I think Michael got his day off yesterday too. Was his game cancelled? I think he was meant to be doing Leash.
He was tweeting about the Leash Cavan game.
So his game was cancelled. That means he wasn't working yesterday. He was meant to.
Probably back
to
Vegas.
I just want this on the record. So we'll have to report this to whoever's on the fifth floor.
Report this to HR.
And then his car trouble didn't make it for the podcast this morning at 10:45 in Dublin.
I want to see an invoice from a mechanic to make sure this is actually legitimate car trouble.
Which is not expensive, by the way.
Well done again. Thanks so much for joining me. And thanks to Kieran Whelan for joining us earlier. We'll be back next week. Football is on a break. It'll be all hurling on the Throw-In in association with Allianz. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or listen on independent.ie. So until next week, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Allianz, supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.